right, welcome to the Young Turks, Cenk Uygur and John Iadarola with you guys on a lovely Wednesday evening, most places in the US at least. A roller coaster ride on today's show, including I hope we get to it, the Trump tax cuts. There's more.
I hope so.
Yeah, there's more information out about that, and even for Trump, even for the Republicans, it's a little stunning. And some of the stats are amazing, and I want to share that with you guys and have you guys share it with people you know to give you a sense of what Trump's all about.
The numbers sound impossible.
Yeah. Okay, so I want to tell you guys about one more thing before we just jump right in, which is Game of Thrones is coming, winter is coming. So what we're going to do, it's one of our more popular things that we do on the TYT network. We do it on What the Flick. We do reviews of it. So this year we're back to doing reviews live. So we will be watching the episode with you guys. That's at 9 o'clock Eastern, 9 p.m. Eastern. It starts this Sunday, and so we'll watch the show together. You'll be watching at home. We'll be watching here. We can't show you the screen, obviously, but you'll see our reaction in the famous Oberyn versus the Mountain. Mm-hmm. That was a bit of a legendary reaction. And then we're going to review it right after the show. We'll have to take a quick break to reset up for the review. So basically at 9:11 p.m. Eastern Sunday night. Now, normally you'd be able to watch that live on both facebook.com/whattheflick, and you will this time too, and youtube.com/whattheflickshow. But for the first one on the 17th, we are going to put it live on the main channel, youtube.com/TYT. Okay, so everybody check that out. It is going to be bananas. And all of our rowdy friends here, some of the top hosts of the network, all participating in the Game of Thrones reviews, which starts this Sunday at 9 o'clock Eastern.
Yeah, not only is it going to be awesome and much anticipated, it's been far too long since last season, but I think especially with what's happened since the last season in our country, we need it.
We need it. We need Game of Thrones.
We need you, Jon Snow.
Although on, you Daenerys. Know nothing. Maybe he Jon Snow, the original Donald Trump. He knows nothing.
Maybe.
Jon Snow keeps going around. Nobody knew the wildlings were this complicated. All right, let's do it, Jon.
Okay, let's jump into some policy. The battle to destroy the Affordable Care Act is about to begin again. Senate Republicans had their recess. They are now back, and it's expected that by tomorrow we will have the new version of the Senate health care bill with new concessions designed to try to get it to the 50 votes they need to eventually have the vice president to break the tie and have it become law, thereby repealing and replacing the Affordable Care Act. So we have McConnell predicting sort of the timeline. You're going to see that in this clip right here.
The news of the day is that, as I think you already know, we'll be on health care next week. We'll be laying out a revised version of the repeal and replace effort, the text of that, on Thursday morning. We hope to have a CBO score by the beginning of the week and a motion to proceed to that bill next week. We're going to do health care next week. And in the reconciliation process, of course, you get to the end. It can sometimes be as a result of exhaustion, but you can get to an end.
They're so exhausted, they actually have to work for a little bit longer than expected.
Yeah.
They were planning to come back from 4th of July vacation, which you're thinking 4th of July vacation. Yeah, theirs is way, way longer than ours.
Yeah.
So they're just next week going to come back from it. And then they were going to go right back, or they came back to it, I think, recently. But it was over a week long. And now they're going to go, we're planning to go on another 5 to 6 week vacation.
Jeez.
But now they might have to come back and roll up their sleeves.
Yeah.
And work a whole 3 or 4 months of the year. Anyway, a little bit of credit to them. If these plans go into effect, they are going to put some of the tax cuts back, meaning they were going to do these giant, giant tax cuts. And now at least some of them are going to go back in for revenue. That's 3.8% tax on investment income. That was in Obamacare, might remain to get some of those moderate voters. And a 0.9% Medicare payroll tax on wages and self-employment income might also stay in so that there's actually some revenue in this bill.
Yeah, so let's break down some of the details. The concessions, as Cenk said, include keeping in place some of the taxes, providing more revenue, and especially money going to particular states. Not mentioned there, but it's believed that at least one of the versions that we'll see will include more money to help deal with the opioid epidemic across America. There's a rumor that it could go from $2 billion in this fund to $48 billion, which again is not as much as is expected to actually deal with the problem, but it's significantly more funding and could theoretically get them a vote, possibly. But it is expected that there will be at least two draft bills. One that includes an amendment sponsored by Ted Cruz and Mike Lee to allow insurance companies to sell plans that do not comply with federal regulatory requirements. So what's interesting there is that there could be two different plans which have more than that one difference between them. So we will have to break down and analyze both of them. But this looks like a way to get Lee and Cruz to sign on. And their idea basically increases up freedom across America by making it so that there will be at least one plan by an insurance carrier that actually provides coverage. And then there will be a bunch of other garbage plans of the sort that we had before the ACA that you will still have to pay for, but will not actually help you in the event of a major life emergency. And that is what they need to sign on, Lee and Cruz. And it's expected that that's one of the things that might actually be there.
So when you have those different plans, the reason why it's a joke is that they say, no, one will follow the requirements that currently exist, including covering pre-existing conditions, and others don't have to. Well, if you set it up that way, the one that covers pre-existing conditions will be more expensive because it'll include people who have pre-existing conditions who you know are going to get sick to some degree, right? And if you sign up for the version of the one that does, you know, that covers mainly healthy people and young people, well, that one's going to be cheaper. But what's that going to create? It's going to create all the healthy and young people going to that plan, thereby leaving the one that covers the pre-existing conditions to be super expensive.
It creates a de facto high risk pool.
Yeah,
and out so, of the current plans, basically.
And so the more expensive it gets, the harder it's going to be for people to afford that plan and for the government to be able to afford the subsidies for that plan. So that creates what they call a death spiral, which then creates a literal death spiral for people with pre-existing conditions. So, but for Cruz and his allies, it's a win-win. But one, they do the Republican plan, which is if you're already in good shape, we'll give you more. Okay, things will be even better for you, right? Oh, God help you if you've got any kind of condition. You had a setback in your life, we are going to crack your back and we're going to be done with you.
Yeah.
And so every man for himself, if you're already well off, great. If you're not, you're in a world of trouble. The second advantage is they then turn around and when the plan with the pre-existing conditions that was originally modeled on Obamacare starts its death spiral, then Cruz will turn around and go, you see that? We told you Obamacare was never going to work. We left its the main part of it intact, but other people wanted the other insurance. So now the one that actually covers people, it's unaffordable. We told you Obamacare was terrible. So then they kill it entirely.
Yeah.
And then if you've got a pre-existing condition, God help you because he's the only one left.
And that's just the latest act of sabotage. That I mean, over the past 8 years, you know, under Obama, there were multiple ways that they effectively sabotage the future of the ACA. It's not in the bad shape that they imply that it is. The CBO report made that clear, but it did make it more difficult to keep prices down and things like that. Now, some people just a few days ago, including John McCain, were saying that the bill is effectively dead. And they were so sure that it's definitely not going to pass. I think that that is crazy to get presumptuous about that. But it is still going to be a challenge for McConnell to come up with one bill that is going to satisfy all the different concerns that these various Republican senators have. We want to show you a couple of little comparisons on particular issues of people on different sides of the issue to give you an idea of how complicated it might be. If we're going to bring up this first one, we're going to So in terms of how much regulation there should be on plans, in terms of pre-existing conditions, things like that, you have people who want to take away those regulations. And there you're seeing on the left, Mike Lee and Ted Cruz particularly want to have all these plans that don't protect, you know, the essential healthcare benefits and have the caps and don't allow for those with pre-existing conditions. But then you have people, you know, who won't vote for a bill that don't have those protections. Moving on to the next one. You're going to see Medicaid funding. Obviously, the bill, as we previewed, has hundreds of billions of dollars of cuts to Medicaid. And there you're seeing the people who want an expansion of Medicaid or a maintenance of what they already have, their concerns. That's quite a few senators there. And then the final one, you're going to see some differences on the government spending and tax credits. And I mean, there's other names that you could add in there as well. I mean, Ted Cruz is complaining about the amount that's still going to be there for subsidies. And so these are pretty big issues for McConnell and the Republicans to push through, but hardly impossible, especially if they can theoretically generate a few hundred billion dollars of government funds to toss into whatever they need to buy people off.
So the people who kept saying, oh, no, they can't, it's impossible, it's dead, this Republicans won't be able to put this bill together. My main response to you is, come on.
Said about the House version.
Come on. How many times do we have to go through this before you learn? So this is a particular dance that they go through. So when the bill is first introduced, you have the most conservative guys in the Senate, Cruz, etc., that come out and go, oh, no, I can't. This is outrageous. I need a lot more concessions. And then you'll have a couple of moderates who will say, nah, I can't sign on. I need some concessions too. Sometimes they'll mean it and sometimes they won't. So then everybody will go, oh my God. Oh, Wheezy, take me now. It's not Wheezy. Anyway, so like we're no never going to get this done. It's a Sanford and Son reference with the wrong name. Anyway, we're never going to get this done, right? And then lo and behold, they get together, and after the, you know, the haggling, conservatives will get more than what the moderates get most of the time. In this case, the tea leaves seem like maybe the moderates are going to, quote unquote, moderate Republicans, such as they are, will get a little bit more than the conservatives, but we'll see. Yeah. But at the end of the day, do they want to kill Obamacare? Yes. Do their donors want it killed so that they can mainly get their tax cuts back? The still the majority of the tax cuts would be returned to them, right? Yes. So they will do as their donors command them. And so, like, oh, I kind of hate the soap opera of it. Yeah. So please spare me all the things about like, oh, it can't, it will, oh my God, as if they have honest, you know, principles and they're trying to negotiate over principles. Well, no, their donors are negotiating, and overall they're all going to make hundreds of billions of dollars by repealing Obamacare, so very, very, very likely they will.
Look, maybe you're right about the Senate. I think it's all a big sham because Trump already said he won't vote for a bill that doesn't have heart and everybody needs to be covered. So like all this Senate stuff, what are we wasting our time for? Yeah, now look, the CBO is going to get both versions of the bill. And what I think is a little bit scary is that, so you alluded to some of the tax cuts. They might theoretically keep a few of the smaller ones in. Others, they might keep them for a few years. And what that seems designed to do is to effectively trick people with the CBO estimate. Because the CBO estimate will now have 5 years of the taxes still being there. So that'll change the numbers quite a bit, make it look better financially. But those tax cuts will still go away, or the taxes will still go away eventually. We're simply postponing the horrific outcome that we saw in the earlier version of the CBO report. But it might fool some people in the mainstream media and some Trump supporters into supporting this bill. This bill, again, the least popular piece of legislation for something like three decades.
Yep. So,
can we show one thing just for 1 second? Just because JR cut this, and I think it's just amazing. It's about the August recess. We talked about it earlier, but look at what Mitch McConnell says here.
Also, due to this unprecedented level of obstruction that we've been experiencing, for example, you may have noticed we had to get cloture yesterday on a district judge in Idaho. I think as of June 28th, there were 178 presidential nominations up here and only 46 confirmed. Therefore, we will be in session the first 2 weeks of August that we had originally anticipated not being here. We will be here as a result of all this obstructionism. Don't have enough time to address all of these issues between now and the originally anticipated August recess.
Can you imagine, Cenk, how frustrated you must be as Mitch McConnell when those bastard Democrats obstruct and stop you from getting an important position on a court like a district judge in Idaho? And not being able to get the judge that you're owed. Can you imagine the obstruction that it's delayed? You eventually get it, but it's delayed. What could be worse?
Maybe if you broke the record on obstruction, as Mitch McConnell did with his filibusters during the Obama administration, and maybe if you blocked a Supreme Court justice rather than one in Idaho, and you blocked it for so long that the Democrats eventually didn't get it, that might be a little bit more of a record of obstruction. So
maybe.
Look, this is what the American people get super annoyed by. That's why they don't like politicians, and I think it also implicates the media a little bit. So Mitch McConnell, look, even the Republicans, even your voters have a gut sense that you're full of crap, that you were the guy blocking Obama every step of the way. So when you come back out like you didn't do that and you didn't break the record on filibusters and you're like, can you believe the Democrats are doing obstructionism? You look preposterous, you look like a fool. And it makes all politicians seem like they are greasy liars. And by the way, the Democrats flip over often as well, don't get me wrong. Like, oh, I can't believe they're doing obstruction to us, and then the Republicans get in office. Look, I would retaliate too, but they do, and then they go from obstruction is terrible to obstruction is great. And so I would just be honest about it. If I'm the Democrats, I'd say, look, these some bitches broke the record on obstruction, and they took Merrick Garland away from us. I will obstruct them to no end. I am going to try to top their record on obstruction. I'd be honest about it. And for McConnell, you know, I think they'd respect you more, including your own voters, if you came out and said, look, when Obama was in charge, we hated him, so we try to block everything he does. So I understand the Democrats are trying to block everything we do, but we have the majority and we're gonna ram it down their throats. I don't care what we did in the past.
Yeah.
Then you know what? Republican voters were like, oh, that sounds strong. Hypocrite, who cares? We're used to that anyway. Mm-hmm. Right? At least don't lie to me and don't give me this gobbledygook. Yeah. And the reason the media aids and abets it is because they don't call them out on it. So it just keeps
on
going.
He's the honorable senator.
Yeah. Anytime he does that at a press conference, it should be all over him. Didn't you break the record? Didn't you break the record? Didn't you break the record on filibusters? Didn't you block Garland for a year? How could you say that with a straight face? That is an unbelievable thing to say. Instead, nary a peep.
Yeah, yeah, they get away with it. Okay, let's turn to slightly different news. As we predicted on last week's power panel, the largest iceberg in human history has now broken free from Antarctica, tearing itself off of the Larsen Sea ice shelf. It totals about 2,240 square miles, about the size of the state of Delaware, and its volume, 40 trillion cubic feet of ice, or 1.1 trillion tons of ice, is twice that of Lake Erie. So it is now broken free, as it had been expected for several months that it eventually would, and is now floating off to God knows where. But that's an amazing stat there, that ice shelf on this gigantic continent lost so much ice when this broke off that it has dropped down to fifth largest ice shelf on Antarctica from fourth. That's how big of an effect it actually had there. And that is now floating off, where it will cause problems potentially near South America on shipping lanes and things like that. But certainly is, I think, a bad sign for the direction our planet is moving, or that we are moving it in.
It's so large that they are considering redrawing the map of Antarctica.
Yeah.
That's amazing. That's how big a piece will now float into the sea. It is about 2/3 of the size of Cyprus. So if you've ever seen Cyprus on a map, it's underneath Turkey, it's sitting right in the middle of the Mediterranean. It's big. Like,
it's a big portion the size of Hawaii.
Yeah.
And four Londons.
If you can imagine almost the size of Hawaii or almost the size of Cyprus, just floating around, floating around.
And Trump's gonna build a hotel in it.
Look, if he has a connection to the president of Antarctica, trust me that he'll try. And he'll send Don Jr. in there. And he'll say he didn't collude at all. Anyway.
Well, so there's an interesting debate going on that we talked about before the show. Now we know that this particular iceberg breaking off is not going to immediately raise ocean levels or anything like that. It was a portion of the Antarctic which is already in the water, so it doesn't actually change for it to have broken off. But there are concerns about what sort of sign this gives us for climate change. And the scientists seem to disagree a little bit in this particular case. So a glaciologist from the Midas team, Martin O'Leary, said, although this is a natural event and we're not aware of any link to human-induced climate change, this puts the ice shelf in a very vulnerable position. This is the furthest back that the ice front has been in recorded history. We're going to be watching very carefully for signs that the rest of the shelf is becoming unstable. Because as we explained on last week's show, when this front-facing section of the ice shelf breaks off, it makes it much easier for the ice further up on the ice shelf to go behind it. And a lot of that ice is not already in the ocean, it is actually on land. So when that moves off and breaks off and goes into the ocean, that will raise ocean levels globally. Now, Martin O'Leary says that they don't have any specific connection to human-induced climate change, but not all scientists actually believe that. One scientist, Christopher Schumann, who works in the area, said, "At this time, we don't see any signs that this is going to cause further break. On the other hand, this is over 10% of the ice shelf area, so that's not a good sign. And it's pretty clear there's a connection to an overall warming that part of Antarctica has experienced." Historically, this is just the latest scary sign. In 2002, the smaller Larsen B ice shelf, which had existed for 10,000 years, partially collapsed and formed an iceberg the size of Rhode Island. NASA doesn't expect the rest of Larsen B to survive the decade. And back in the previous decade, there was another large section that broke off. So we had Rhode Island, now we have Delaware. I don't know, is the next one Connecticut? Oh, we're actually gonna have Texas? What's gonna happen?
We might even eventually get into red states. Okay, so damn it, John, I'm not a scientist, I'm a talk show host. Mm-hmm. So it is hard for me to judge which of these scientists are right. And I'm not in the right wing camp, which says, scientists, I don't believe them. So if a majority of them say that it is not related to climate change, and it's, mm-hmm. and it's not a majority, they're split, right? This is not an issue where you have 97% of the world's scientists on one side. Then I'm going to say, I guess they know better than I do. But as a matter of logic, I'm on the side of the scientists that are saying, of course it's related. The reason why it's of course is because, well, if you have global warming, which all the scientists agree to, right, 97% of the world's scientists, well, it'll make that ice shelf warmer, making it more likely to break off. That doesn't mean it's the only factor. And it doesn't even mean that it wouldn't necessarily happen otherwise, but could it be happening quicker because it is warmer? Its logic seems to indicate almost certainly.
Yeah.
And then when you look at what John was telling you, Larsen A ice shelf broke off in 95, Larsen B, the size of Rhode Island, broke off in 02, and now this one just broke off in 2017. Well, that's a ton of ice breaking off very recently, especially given that Larsen B had been in place for 10,000 years. So it seems to me that the warming logically had something to do with it. And obviously some of the scientists come out on that side, but it's just a little less clear than most of the climate change issues.
Yeah, I would not call myself an expert yet, although I am working on it. I've studied it quite a bit, both when I was in academia and more recently. I think that the stance of a lot of scientists is less that it has nothing to do with human-induced climate change, and rather that it's difficult to point specifically the connection. It's more, I mean, they do the same thing when it comes to natural disasters, storms, and you know, increased size and frequency and intensity of hurricanes, that you can't say that this hurricane would not have existed if not for climate change, but you will see more hurricanes of a particular sort. I think that, and also, by the way, and this is the thing about scientists that the right wing knows nothing about, scientists, for the most part, aside from a few, are far more humble than they should be about both their expertise, but also about what their data has shown. And so they're very slow to claim a connection until repeatedly peer-reviewed studies have shown it. And so I think that they're being a little bit careful here. I don't think that many would say that there is no connection.
Yeah, and so if all they're saying is you can't know for sure if this particular hurricane is connected to global warming or this particular ice shelf breaking off, then sure, of course we agree with that. In that we don't want to Inhofe it, like, I still have a snowball, so there must be no climate change. There's hurricanes, so there must be climate change. No, of course not. There's hurricanes before, ice shelves have broken off before. The question is the severity, the degree to which it's happening, and the speed at which it's happening. And so logically, I think most scientists agree that it is contributing factor to it. They're just being overly cautious in our interpretation, the best we can tell, in saying you can't tell that it's the proximate cause for this particular ice shelf.
That's my belief.
Which is fair.
Yeah.
All right, you want to take a quick break?
Yeah, why don't we take our first break?
All right, let's take a break. When we come back, fear not, we do have Trump news.
It's coming. Still a little bit off, but
yes,
it's coming.
Yeah, and we also have more general Republican hideous behavior. That's also coming up.
Got some locker room talk for you.
Yeah, no handcuffs. Could you imagine one whisper of a dream when you actually see handcuffs on at least a Trump?
Tiffany.
God knows what she's up to. Anyway, we'll be right back. All right, back on the Young Turks, Cenk and John with you. Just Ray here writes in on hashtag TYT Live, saying the GOP healthcare bill is dead is the same as saying Trump has no chance of being president. Didn't work out so well. just comes out. All right, John Seal says, Trump, the iceberg is Obama's fault. Wait for it.
I saw someone tweeted that the Chinese broke it off Antarctica as a hoax.
It is a very elaborate hoax. Or someone, a 400-pound guy in his basement might have done it.
Maybe.
Nobody knows. Control Left writes in, oh, please, please, please let it hit Mar-a-Lago first.
Iceberg.
Just throw it ahead. Okay, anyway. And then finally, RDGP writes in, I don't know if this is technically a haiku, but it's definitely a poem. The TYT CEO is Jenks. He seeks to break up. He seeks to break up banks through his activism. He fights corporatism, and for that we give him our thanks.
Damn. Isn't that a limerick?
Top of the morning.
Let's ask Francis when he gets back.
Okay, he's Scottish, not Irish. Although I don't know where limericks come from. Okay, all right. Well, RDGP, that was really nice. What am I doing? That's a poem, dude. T-shirt. We're bringing back House TYT. We just decided.
Is that a T-shirt I see?
Yeah, we're gonna bring back House TYT T-shirts for Game of Thrones. Very likely. Not official
with
decision.
The lizard.
I'll be like Trump. We're going to be announcing something soon. It's going to be terrific. Okay. Anyway, go to shoptyt.com. But RDGP, you don't have to because you're going to get a free one.
Boom. There you go.
All right. What's next?
Okay. Back into the news. Kirsten Anderson worked as a staffer for the Iowa Senate GOP, and in the office that she worked in, the as they call it, locker room talk got so bad that she and others tried to resolve the situation, tried to change the culture there. And the situation did change. She was fired. Now, that's her account, terrible, to be fair. The state attorneys defending the case don't dispute all of her accounts of lewd behavior in the office, but contend she was fired after months of problems with the quality of her work, which I believe they cut and pasted from some of Fox News' explanations as to why they let some of their women go. But anyway, let's get into some of what she alleges took place, some of the quotes that she heard, because this stuff gets interesting, a little bit funny, and a little bit rough. She said that conversation and jokes were always free-flowing.
Which that sounds fun.
By so itself,
far.
Sounds
no problem.
Fine.
No problem.
Anderson said that she was friends with senior analyst Jim Friedrich, but she and other women were bothered by taunts and teasing from him about their sex lives and other lewd and racially insensitive topics. So, no. Man, he's really fitting everything in there. Jeez.
Yeah, it's starting to be problematic here.
A little bit.
Yeah, I mean, the racially insensitive stuff, God knows where that's going to go. Mm. And asking about your personal sex life, no, that's out of bounds.
Taunting you about your sex life.
Yeah, further out of bounds, clearly out of bounds, but let's get to the more details.
Okay, she says, sometimes we would even yell, I mean really yell at him to stop. It got to the point where we would even yell, how would you like it if we said these things to you? And his reply was either laughter or, I don't care, you can say whatever you want to me. Which I knew before reading it would be his response.
Yeah.
That would be most men's response in this case, because men think in a particular way, I guess.
Yeah, it's the least effective thing you could do to a person who's either sexually harassing you or taunting you in some other way like that. Well, how would you like it if I did it to you?
That's all he wants. That's literally the only thing that he wants.
He's basically saying, please talk about my sex life.
He wants it so bad that he's willing to risk a sexual harassment lawsuit to get it.
Yeah. So that's not very effective. But
yes. Now there is more.
Yes.
Anderson recalled one incident in which Friedrich showed her a naked picture of reality TV star Kim Kardashian on his work computer and asked her what she thought. She doesn't actually say what she thought. At other times, Friedrich would announce a quote, hot chick report and summon staff in the office to look at women walking by outside his window. Which, okay, so he says hot chick alert. It's a little bit weird for a grown man to say that. Theoretically, people go to the window. Okay, that's a little bit weird. But he's summoning people to the window, it says, to look at hot chicks walking by. That's a little weird.
Okay, so let me tell you the things that I think are acceptable.
And there will be more, by the way.
Yeah. So if you worked on Pop Trigger on the TYT network and your job was to cover entertainment news. Looking at naked pictures of Kim Kardashian are completely within your work context.
It's a responsibility of yours.
You have to. I think there's some point to be made that there's it's part of your job.
That's what Brett told me.
Yes. If you're working at some state political office, that has nothing to do with your job.
No.
And it is textbook sexual harassment to go around a woman being like, look, check out this naked chick. Yeah, look everybody, naked chicks, right? So no, you can't do that. But still, I don't want to minimize it, but that's the least of his problems.
Yeah.
You can't run into an office and be like, hey everybody, check out this hot chick that we all want to stare at. Like, you couldn't do that in a normal office. You're at a political office.
Yeah.
Like, you're supposed to be representing the people of Iowa, and meanwhile, you're like, hey buddy, I found somebody that I'd like to like leer at. You guys want to leer at him with me?
Yeah.
No, not acceptable.
And I would say then even worse is directly taunting and teasing about their sex life and trying to get involved with it and talk to them about it.
Yeah, where, in fact, we have them on tape if I could just play that real quick.
Please forgive me if I'm being personal, but tell me about your sex life.
How did you remember you had that? Because think about it, if you're a staffer, you're Kirsten Anderson, you're just trying to like move up in your career, this is probably not where you see yourself ending, and this guy that theoretically has power over the rest of your career is taunting you about your sex life. So what if you don't play along? You don't think it's at least reasonable to think that the woman could be worried about what effect that could have on her career? Of course she's going to.
Yeah, look, let me give two more pieces of leeway to guys. And then, you know, I don't know for what degree of trouble I'll get in over this. But so if you try one thing and because you're not sure, hey, maybe you want to date somebody at work. Now, by the way, I believe that's perfectly okay. It depends probably on the state that you're in, right? But you ask them out or whatever, and then they say no, and you let it go. I think everybody's going to live.
Okay? I think it depends on the power dynamic. But
yes.
Theoretically, if you're not in a management position.
But I think in California, even in a management position, now they have to allow you to date people. Okay, so it's getting a little topsy-turvy, but it's okay. But if you then persist knowing that they're not interested in that kind of talk, whether it was a joke, you asked them on a date, whatever it was, and you continue to persist, dude, that is, again, textbook harassment. Don't come back and then go, how could I have known, right?
Yeah.
You could say, how could I have known in the first joke, or you know, but you can't say it on the third one or the 18th one.
Especially when they're specifically complaining and in their words, yelling at you to stop. Now, there's a few other things that happened, three more things. So this is about Friedrich. He started calling women expletives, especially his wife. This is, I think, after they were on the outs. Their relationship had deteriorated. The jokes increased. The anger towards ethnicities increased.
Oh boy.
It was very scary. She also said, she told jurors that former Senator Sean Hammerlink, a DeWitt Republican, regularly stopped by the staff office and would comment on the size of certain lobbyists' breasts.
Okay, now what's your excuse for that one? I mean, come on, you can't. Of course you can't do that at work.
I got something worse for you.
Okay.
The lobbyists theoretically are of age, at least. Hammerlink would make comments about the skirt lengths of Senate pages, juniors and seniors in high school who are hired to help legislators with daily tasks. I mean, there you're talking about, let's be generous, 17-year-old girls, maybe?
So remember, these
maybe
are
younger?
Two different guys. Friedrich is the one throwing the C word around. Mm-hmm. Hammerlink is the one checking out the juniors and seniors in high school. Again, you know, if one reference to the lobbyist breast is already too far in this context, okay? But if you have been, if someone at the office complained and said, I do not like when you mention other women's breast size as a way we should judge them in the work context.
Yeah.
You're insane to continue to do that, and of course you're going to get sued, and you should.
Yeah.
So, and look, and one last bone to the guys. Look, nobody's trying to regulate your thoughts, and if you guys are, and if you got a friend at work, and you guys are at lunch somewhere else, and you're joking around, nobody's going to be PC cops and come and arrest you at Applebee's, okay? But if a person has said at work, you have made them uncomfortable with the sexual things that you are saying, then yes, you're out of bounds. You're out of bounds. You've got to be able to make that distinction.
Yeah. That would seem to be obvious, but apparently on some of them it's not. Family values.
Yeah, I was just going to say.
Family values. They value large-breasted lobbyists. That's the particular set of family values that they have.
Yeah, to be fair to the Republican Party, they are the Family Values Party. So they even value your daughters.
They do. Oh, that's where it just gets uncomfortable. And maybe he doesn't know. I don't know. But those girls are just trying to get involved. It's an internship. They're worried about college. And some gross old guy's commenting on them. Hopefully they didn't hear it at the very least.
Yeah, last thing is that you don't know who's right. They'll have to go to court and sort this out. But it is an awfully convenient timing that after she complains about sexual harassment, files for sexual harassment, they're like, right, we found a file here saying shoddy work.
Yeah.
Right? Now it could be, and especially if they fired her first and then she complained about sexual harassment, then okay.
She's alleging that that's not the case.
Yeah, she's alleging, and that's why you go to court. So I don't want to totally prejudge, but that timing seems pretty relevant as to what happened first.
Yeah. Okay, well, why don't we jump back into something that was brought to my attention just today. Donald Trump is apparently interested in finding out about the real issues that real Americans care about, unfiltered from all of that mainstream media BS. And so if you're one of the lucky few on his email listserv, you might have received an email including a section like this. Politicians have spent too much time bickering and not enough time listening. So today we're turning off that awful blistering noise of Washington. Instead, I want to hear from you. I want to hear from the American heartland. The real America that lives outside of the DC media fantasy world, because outside of DC, it's just the heartland. There's nothing else, there's no coast. With our 6-month mark approaching, I want you to take the Listening to America survey to tell me the true sentiments, concerns, and interests of real America. That's not the whole message. There was a whole lot of bashing of the media and saying that you can't trust the media and all that. But then you click on the link and you go to this survey. I think that we can help him out here in just a second, but I want to give you an idea of the sort of questions that are in this survey. Some of them are, sort of normal things you expect from a right winger. Have excessive government regulations, rules, and red tape burdened you personally? Probably not, but okay, they want to find out more about that. Do you think universities today indoctrinate rather than teach students? There you're getting into slightly more questionable territory. Do you trust the media? Wow. Well, we know that they probably don't if they're on his listserv. Do you find the news to be generally too negative/hateful? They love that hateful media.
Yeah. So it's called the Listening to America survey, but what this is a classic push poll.
Yes.
So a push poll is designed to get you to get you to think one way while posing it as a question. Mm-hmm. So in the old days, you would have had half of these questions with the Republican Party anyway, distrusting the media, etc. But the Trump team adds extra words to it, like, do you find the media to be hateful? They wouldn't say that in the past. Now though, Trump's like, oh, they're only criticizing me because they hate me, right? So they're taking that Trump talking point and pushing it through their poll while they're trying to figure out what you want while they're listening to you. No, the whole point is to talk to you.
Yeah, and some of it, again, seems to be leading in that direction. Do you feel that you cannot publicly admit that you support Trump?
Although that one's an interesting question.
It's an interesting question. I think there should be a bit of shame, but that's fine. And they're certainly going to lead to more people feeling like that after seeing the question. English is currently not recognized as the official language of the United States. Do you think it should be? So this, again, this is about the real issues that real Americans care about. But it's not just questions. There is actually an opportunity for the people who do this survey to write back. So if you bring this up, you're gonna see there's a text field there. What else do you think the president needs to know about the real America? We're listening. Now, the interesting thing about Trump is that he doesn't seem to know much about anything, especially America and the issues that matter to it most, considering what he's likely to do on taxes, his approach to climate change, what they're doing potentially to healthcare, even as we speak. And so look, he wants to ask about English as the official language and whether all the media shouldn't be trusted, but there are some big issues out there. And theoretically, if you go to gop.com/listeningtoamericasurveys, we're gonna put the link right there, you can fill that out. And we can give him some suggestions for real issues that he should be focusing on, what he needs to know about real America and not just his portrayal of it on Twitter.
Yeah, so these are meant to be touch points on cultural issues that actually don't have anything to do with your life, but that get to the core of your identity and make you emotional. So how many times have you had a real issue with English as the official language? I've had it sometimes. When I'm in Miami, I do get frustrated that at least 50% of that particular city speaks Spanish, and some percentage speak only Spanish. So I have trouble communicating. Now, it's not my country, it's not my city solely, right? Mm-hmm. I love Miami, but other people live in it, right? So they know, they speak Spanish, I speak English. You could say that's a sad day for me, sad day for them. Mm-hmm. I don't want to dictate that that's the official language. But my point is, even if you are from time to time frustrated by it, as I am, I wish we would all speak one language, but that's a wish, right? Mm-hmm. That is a minuscule issue. It has happened to me in my life, particularly because of Miami, what, 7 times, right? And if you live in Kansas, how many times did it happen to you where you're like, there we go again with Tagalog.
Yeah.
I need English here. Everybody here is speaking.
Always Urdu. Urdu.
I can't, you know, if I hear one more person talking Swahili, I'm out of here, okay? I'm going to move out of Topeka. So this is not a real issue, but it gets you to go, America is supposed to speak English, man. That goes to my identity. I'm angry. I don't know what I'm angry at, but I'm angry. But in terms of what actually affects your life, Jesus, whether you know how high your premium is, your copay, whether you have health care, when someone in your family gets sick, oh my God, that is monumentally important.
Totally.
But the point of these so-called issues is to distract you from that. And part of the reason that people do distractions, and they do it like in a heist, for example, is so you don't see them taking the money out from the other end of the building.
Yeah.
And so the tax cuts that are coming are so gigantic and so exclusively for the rich that they want you to worry about things that don't matter at all while they pull off that heist.
Exactly. Yeah, we got to take our second break, but when we come back, we do have two more stories. One of them will be breaking down those tax cuts, giving you some of the fabulously large numbers there. Don't go anywhere.
Back on the Young Turks, Cenk and John with you today. Brendan Harris wrote in on YouTube Super Chat, I think the Trumps are just so used to being untouchable in the field of white collar crime, thanks to their wealth, but now they're stepping into treason territory and woefully unprepared, hence no attempt to cover up. That's actually going to be the heart of the next discussion, Brendan, so thank you for bringing that up. Nick writes on Twitter, Cenk's soundboard is a treasure trove of greatness. Well, it is hard to disagree with that. We did have a giveaway. We did have a giveaway of the soundboard during the fundraising drive for journalists. Maybe we'll re-bring back the soundboard in our next app, but we'll see. We'll see.
Imagine someday, you know, after the presidency of Don Trump Jr. There's nothing left, you know, and people are picking through the remains and they find this 100 years in the future. They're going to try to figure out the significance of each one of those quotes. Why were these chosen?
And they and the last thing that they'll ever hear, is maybe the very last episode of The Young Turks.
They're kicking me out the door. They're kicking me out the door.
Give me a break.
Okay, anyways, last one is Matt Brownfield writing in. What is it with these scumbags and so desperately wanting to regress society back to the madmen thinking and behaving? Well, there's a good reason for that. Back then, they felt like they were in charge, and they were. They could do anything they wanted. They could sexually harass people. They could, oftentimes at work, sexually assault people and get away with it. So power corrupts, absolute power corrupts, absolutely. And so they're like, well, you're taking my right to harass women away from me. Mm-hmm. They perceive that as their right.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, and a lot of people will defend them. You can see it in the comments on that video if you'd like. Anyway, let's jump back into the news from yesterday. Last night, Donald Trump Jr. was grilled by Sean Hannity for his apparent interest in working with the Russian government to help get his father elected. I'm sorry, I'm just having some fun. It was Sean Hannity's show, which is a safe space for the Trump family. And Trump went there and nowhere else because he knew he would be treated with kid gloves for him. So we've got some videos of him explaining why he thinks that he didn't do anything wrong. Here's the first.
If there was something that came from it that was shady, if it was a danger to national security, I would obviously bring it right to someone, but I didn't know what anything was. It turns out it was nothing, and therefore there's nothing to be able to actually talk about.
The whole contact took how long? How long was the meeting?
Oh, 20 minutes or so.
About 20 minutes. And Jared left after 5 or 10?
Yes.
Like she said, and Paul Manafort was on his...
On his phone.
The whole time?
Pretty much. Listen, like I said, it became pretty apparent that this was not what we were in there talking about.
A lot of people are going to want to know this about your father.
Mm-hmm.
Did you tell your father anything about this?
No. It was such a nothing. There was nothing to tell. I mean, I wouldn't have even remembered it until you start scouring through the stuff. It was literally just a wasted 20 minutes, which was a shame.
There's two awesome things. One is you have not committed a crime if you were on your cell phone while doing it. So if you ever murder someone, hold the gun in one hand, the phone in the other. And the second one is that he really seems to think that if it's proven that he didn't get anything from it, and that has not been proven because we've seen the emails that he chose to leak. We didn't see the emails that came before that or after that, which are probably going to be very interesting. That if he didn't find anything, then he is in the clear. That is not the case. He expressed a clear desire after learning that this was a representative of the Russian government using information given by the Russian government. He said, I want it. It doesn't matter if you end up getting it. That is the crime right there.
So that's part of conspiracy. And so to take out Russia, which is an adversary of ours, they don't necessarily have to be, but they kind of happen to be, mm-hmm. right? But even if it was an ally, it's a foreign government that you can't take stolen goods from or stolen information from of value. That breaks two different laws. So, but imagine that it was Al-Qaeda. And he's like, look, I just want to hear them out. I went to Al-Qaeda, said they had secret information on Hillary Clinton that could really hurt her campaign. So I went and met with them because I wanted to hear them out. That's not an excuse, right? No. Now, take out Al-Qaeda and put in Canada, you actually have the same thing. And Russia's somewhere in between. So it's a terrible excuse.
Yeah.
And then at the end there, if you noticed, he did not answer the question. He asked, now you didn't tell your dad, did you? Like, which is all these Hannity softballs. Now, let's get you on the record here saying all the right things, Don. Yeah. But he couldn't.
Yeah, he just kept looking away when he was asked the question, the classic lying thing.
Yeah.
And look, they're gonna keep saying that Trump didn't know about it. There's some small chance that is the case. Again, it's really hard to say that this was an unimportant meeting to you when you decided to not only go without knowing the person as the son of the president, but you decided to bring his son-in-law and chief advisor and his campaign manager. For some reason, you felt you needed to bring all those people, even though it was a nothing meeting that you don't even remember. That makes a lot of sense. But as Keith Olbermann has pointed out about 1,000 times now on Twitter, it's weird that within 10 minutes of the end of your meeting with this person that produced nothing, your father began tweeting about the 33,000 emails of Hillary Clinton that have gone missing. That is possibly just a coincidence, but that's an interesting one.
So yesterday we showed you the video of Trump making the speech between the time that his son set up the meeting, but before he actually had the meeting. And in that interim period, Trump did a speech where he's like, oh, we're gonna get some information on Hillary, you're gonna love it.
Yeah.
And then it turns out they didn't get the information on Hillary. And hence, right after the meeting, he starts saying and tweeting, hey, does anybody have those 30,000 emails that, because they thought they were gonna get the 30,000 emails that Hillary Clinton deleted from the Russians.
Yeah, exactly.
And so when they didn't get it from the Russians, they're like, damn it, okay, let's just ask for it publicly.
Exactly. Now let's turn to the video again, just a little bit more from yesterday's interview.
Did you hand over any and all documents?
Well, I will. I've said it publicly, I said it yesterday. More than happy to cooperate with everyone. I just want the truth to get out there. I mean, that's part of why I released all the stuff today. I wanted to get it all out there. They're trying to drag out the story, in all fairness. You know, they have it. They want to drip a little bit today, drip a little bit then. So I was like, here it is. I'm more than happy to be transparent about it, and I'm more than happy to cooperate with everyone.
So as far as you know, as far as this incident is concerned, this is all of it.
This is everything. This is everything.
Started by saying there are more documents, being clear there. Then saying they want to drag it out and drip and drip and drip, and thank God that they did. Because each time they did that, he had to revise his story, showing that he was lying from the beginning. First of all, that he didn't remember that it happened. Then that it was about adoption, supposedly. Then that it was just about information was offered, but I had no idea who it was from. And then it became clear that he knew exactly who it was from, and it was from the Russian government. If they had just done the whole thing at once, we would not have gotten the clear trail of lies from Donald Trump Jr.
So one of the things that I'm pissed about this story is that we made a master graphic here that accidentally makes Sean Hannity and Eric Trump look cool.
Yeah.
Okay, Donald Trump, you really can't make look cool. Okay.
Eric Trump has never looked that cool.
Yeah, Hannity's never looked that cool. So, but yes, to what you said, John, clearly, I mean, he's such a bad liar. He says, have you released everything? I will.
Yeah. And then later, it's everything. Dude, keep your lies straight. You're so dumb.
But by the way, also, and I know that the right wingers watching this are going to hate this. Look at the, like, don't call it white privilege if you want, call it rich privilege. You're facing potentially multiple criminal issues right there. I'm happy to work to resolve this issue. No, you have to work to resolve this issue because you might well have broken the law. It's like, I would love to talk to the police about this if necessary. No, you need to because you're an idiot and you got yourself in this situation. However, there's more to this prevent defense than just Donald Trump going on state media last night. You also have these reports being released by the Washington Post about what's going to happen to the journalists that leaked this story, or that broke this story. This is coming out of the White House. Their plan, as one member of the team describes it, is to research the reporter's previous work, in some cases going back years, and to exploit any mistakes or perceived biases. They intend to demand corrections, trumpet errors on social media, and feed them to conservative outlets such as Fox News. Although one admits that there is an issue with this, this strategy, saying the meeting happened. It's tough to go to war with the facts. But some people do. Some people have been engaged in a war on info for quite a while. You can maintain that for years.
Yeah, I actually disagree with that last advisor. The conservatives have been going to war with facts for a long, long time. And it's not just conservatives. It's a very one of the oldest propaganda tricks, which is that if you're attacked on something that is true, counterattack the messenger. Mm-hmm. It doesn't, like, the substance of what happened, the meeting with the Russians, that collusion, was it a crime, not a crime, was it a conspiracy, etc. Don't worry about that. If you can just attack the messenger and smear them, it will confuse the audience. They'll go, I don't know, but is that guy trustworthy, the guy who broke the story? Now, in this case, Donald Trump Jr. actually leaked the emails himself. So you'd have
because he knew the New York Times was going to imminently.
I know, but my point is that the person who wrote the New York Times story then is irrelevant.
Yeah.
Because if you said, oh, you can't trust him to have accurately quoted the emails, and then you show other things he did wrong, at least you'd have a leg to stand on. But in this case, the person who they got the information from is Donald Trump Jr.
Yeah.
So you'd have to attack his credibility, which
can
is
we
not
trust
difficult.
Him to release the information without? Yeah. Well, we'll see.
But they will, and they will muddy the waters, and it'll work great.
Well, let's look at a little bit of that muddying the waters. So not just Sean Hannity, but let's look at the way Fox News decided to break some of this incredibly interesting information to their audience. You're going to see this in video 7.
So far, our review has identified key sections. The Crown Prosecutor of Russia met with his father and in their meeting offered to provide the Trump campaign with some official documents and information that would incriminate Hillary and her dealings with Russia and would be very useful to your father. He continues, this is obviously very high level and sensitive information. I can also send this info to your father via Rona, but it is ultra sensitive, so wanted to send to you first.
So that last paragraph there had the classic dot dot dot. That means there was something that didn't matter, and you needed to fit all the words on one page, so you take it out. But what they took out in that dot 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 was that this information was coming from Russia and was part of the Russian government's plan to get your father elected. Weird that that's what they chose to take out of that paragraph. And so you can have watched that as a Fox News viewer and have basically missed the entirety of that story thanks to their creative use of ellipses.
Yeah, they mentioned Russia only once, but in the context of was Russia helping Hillary?
Yes.
That was in the emails. They took out every other reference to Russia where Goldstone said, this is from the Russian government.
And that they're supporting your father.
Yes.
Weird.
Yeah.
This is why we call it state media.
And that's exactly how they muddy the waters. So if you're watching Fox News, you will scream to your friends and family, no, it had nothing to do with Russia. I saw it on Fox News. The emails didn't say Russia except for how she's helping Hillary, right? And then later they'll attack the writers from the New York Times as they're planning to do now. And you'll go, boy, did you know that guy once had a traffic ticket and might have smoked weed when he was in seventh grade? Did you know that? Okay, and I have family members and friends who come and say that stuff to us, right? Because they hear that propaganda and they just put it out there until people go, ah, I don't know, I can't tell who's right and who's wrong.
Yeah, and I know which team I'm on, so I guess I'll just go with that.
Yeah. Okay, taxes. Yes, let's do taxes.
Okay, we gotta do it fast though, that's all. But this is important and it's a good preview of what you can expect in a few months. Take a look at the new results of an analysis by the Tax Policy Center of Trump's proposed tax plan. Now, this is from about a month, month and a half ago. He had these bullet point lists of some of his priorities for taxes. Now, we've over the past year or two given you multiple breakdowns of what his tax plan is likely to look like. At one point, I went back through some of Trump's old books and looked at his principles and what tax reform should look like. And the numbers have always been stark. These newer ones also extremely stark. The tax cuts included in the Trump administration's outline for tax reform released in April could cut federal revenues by as much as $7.8 trillion over 10 years, and the benefits would go almost exclusively to the top 5%, not the top 10%. Forget the top 10% business. That's from like 5, 6 years ago. Now we're focusing on at least the top 5%. Just for context, this is a smaller tax cut. A $3.4 trillion tax cut would amount to about 12% of GDP by 2027, slightly larger than all the tax cuts George W. Bush passed while in office. That's less than half as big as the expected effect of these tax cuts. And so, that's bigger than all of the George W. tax cuts.
So the reason they use the $3.4 trillion number is if you believe the Republicans and give them every benefit of the doubt.
Yes.
And that they're going to take away loopholes. So some of those loopholes, I think they will take away because that actually helps the middle class more, and they don't really care about helping the middle class.
Yeah.
Some of them, there's no way they're taking away. But if you gave them all the benefit of the doubt and said, okay, so we'll give you credit for those, the amount of the tax cut goes from $7.8 trillion to only $3.4 trillion, which goes almost all to the rich.
Yeah.
And so the best case scenario is, for the Republicans who claim that they care about balanced budgets, they're going to put a $3.4 trillion hole in the budget.
And by the way, it's not just assuming that they'll do the loopholes. It's also giving them the benefit of the doubt on their dynamic scoring, where you believe all their propaganda about how much these tax cuts are going to help the economy. If you assume a bunch of economic growth that has not been proven, and we've seen under George W. Bush, how great did the economy do after these tax cuts? The economy fell apart just a few years later. So I don't know why we would give them the dynamic scoring, but they did to get to that $3.4 trillion. So I think it's much more likely to be near the $8 trillion mark.
So if you support these tax cuts, you are never, ever allowed to talk about balanced budgets again.
Yeah.
Because you don't believe it, you don't come close to believing it. All you want is tax cuts for the rich, and that's fine, just own up to it.
Yeah, and now let's look at how they prioritize different classes in America. The overall plan would give the average family earning under $25,000 per year a $40 tax cut.
Wow.
Or a 0.3% boost in after-tax income. Which, look, hey, that's nice. You can take your spouse out, go see Wonder Woman or something with your $40. I mean, you're not going to get popcorn or soda or anything like that, but you can maybe see the movie in most parts of the country. Looks a little bit different for the richest Americans. The top 0.1% earning above $3.4 million a year would get an average tax cut of $937,700, or a 13.3% boost in after-tax income. They're already earning over $3 million a year, and you're just gonna toss another $1 million at them.
Yeah.
Enjoy that while you're at the movies.
So just a little bit of context there. The top 0.1% starts at $3.4 million,
yeah.
Right? So the reason why the tax cut is on average nearly $1 million is because it goes all the way up to the billionaires.
They'll throw off the numbers a little bit.
Yeah. Right. So having said that, look, $1 million tax cut for the richest people in the country is unreal and painful to think about.
On average. Of course, someone like Sheldon Adelson is going to get far more, obviously. Yeah.
Yeah. And one, even a tiny proportion of another tax cut from the healthcare bill,
yeah,
gives Sheldon Adelson, I think, like $40 million
a year.
Right. This will give him way more than that. So, okay, so, but that's why the percentages matter. So, if the numbers were huge, but they said, hey, look, you know what, for the poor, it actually is a bigger percentage of their income that we're helping. Mm-hmm. So yeah, the rich are getting a lot too, but what we're really trying to do is help the poor, most importantly, the middle class, right? But that is not the case. For the poor and the middle class, you get a tiny, tiny percentage help. Not just raw numbers, percentage-wise, tiny, minuscule. But the rich get a huge percentage break when they need it the least. 13.3% of their income goes right back to them. And it's a giant giveaway. So I just want to give you last couple of things here. So if you look at the tax cuts that are proposed here, 61% of the tax cuts goes to the top 1%. 61%. So only 31%, I'm sorry, 39% have to be shared by 99% of us. Yeah. Okay. So when they say it's for all of us, understand that's not true. 61% goes straight to the very richest people in the country. But even that is not that big a deal. But when you look at the effects of the cut and the revenue raisers in the plan, for the top 5%, they get 94.8% of all of the benefits. So the 5% richest people in the country get 95% of the benefits of this tax cut.
Yeah.
And the other 95% of us get only 5% of the benefits. So if you ever had a doubt about what the Republican Party stands for and who they stand for, that is now resolved. That you cannot argue that this is anything but a gigantic, historic giveaway to the rich. So don't, if you're a Republican, don't ever talk about wealth redistribution again. Because you love wealth redistribution, you just want to redistribute it to the top. And lastly, the corporate taxes are also going to be cut. In fact, that is going to be the largest cut in the entirety of this plan is for corporate taxes. Because poor old corporations, which happen to give billions of dollars in donations to the politicians who are passing these laws, they just don't get enough of a break. John, in the golden era of the 1950s, the taxes on corporations weren't that bad. That's why we were so successful. That's why we were the number one economy and we grew the way that we did. And now they're so overburdened by taxes. So let me show you the reality. So here's the chart, 1952. Corporations paid 32% of all taxes in America. In 2015, they were down to less than 11% of taxes.
That's before Trump.
They reduced their tax burden by 2/3. And it is that money does not go away. That is wealth redistribution. It's a pie chart. It goes to other parts where, guess where it goes to? It mainly went to the payroll tax for social insurance and retirement. And the payroll tax is paid by the middle class.
Yeah.
They redistributed their tax burden from corporations to you, and now they come back and go, oh, it wasn't enough, it wasn't enough. Now they're gonna cut corporate taxes from 35% to 15%. So now you'll pay an even bigger burden of taxes. And it's a win-win for them, because then they turn around and go, aren't you paying so much taxes? And you go, oh my God, you're right, I am. So let's cut taxes. But what they don't tell you is they're gonna cut taxes not for you, but for the rich and for corporations.
Yeah.
So it's a double win for them. You get mad at the Democrats when in fact they just pulled off the biggest wealth redistribution of your lifetime.
Should be fun.
Okay, all right, we're out of time. Now, when we come back, we've got a situation where somebody got arrested for cursing. Normally, I'm against that. In this case, though, there is one part of it that might swing you in the other direction. So come back, we'll tell you all about that.